This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Victorian-era Valentines of Schaefer, Minnesota. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXE.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for March the 11th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. Rural communities are big beneficiaries from the COVID-19 relief bill Congress passed on Wednesday. Eric Tegedoff explains.
The $1.9 trillion bill has some well-known provisions, such as the $1,400 stimulus checks, but it also includes billions of dollars in relief for rural and farming communities across the country. President of the Montana Farmers Union, Walter Schweitzer, says farmers in rural towns didn't seem to get much relief from the first two relief bills.
Our rural communities are suffering, and no one seemed to care. And this first $3 trillion, it seemed to miss Montana.
Opponents of the measure say it's too big and could overheat the economy, potentially driving up inflation and hurting consumers.
The bill also provides broader benefits like $350 billion to state and local governments and extended unemployment relief through September, reauthorizing a $300 boost in weekly benefits. The Senate voted to confirm Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland Wednesday. Garland confirmed on a vote of 70-30. CNN reports the former chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit has been praised by members of both parties. He pledged in his nomination hearing last month to fend off any effort by anyone to politically influence the Justice Department's investigations. CNN notes Garland said his first priority would be to fully prosecute the heinous crimes committed in the attack on the Capitol on January the 6th. Meantime, Politico reports the Senate confirmed Michael Reagan to head the Environmental Protection Agency, putting the North Carolina regulator in charge of restoring the climate and water pollution regulations that the Trump administration had weakened. 1 year into the pandemic, California is ranked the nation's 20th best state for children. That's according to a new report from the nonprofit Save the Children.
Researchers looked at the data on how many families experience hunger or poverty or lack the tools for remote learning. Will Detmar, California State Director for Save the Children, says the data on hunger is troubling.
One out of five California households are reporting that they do not have enough food for their kids to eat. That's 2.1 million kids in the Golden State.
The report found that 10% of California families say they don't have the right tools to get all their kids on Zoom classes every day. 50% say they're having trouble paying bills, a number that goes up to 65% for Black and Latino families. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The COVID stimulus bill aims to cut childhood poverty in half. The Golden State stimulus, approved in February, provides direct relief to low-income families, struggling businesses, and puts millions into state-subsidized child care. This is PNS. Calling the issue a matter of great public importance, a judge ruled that parents challenging the constitutionality of Pennsylvania's school funding system are entitled to their day in court.
The lawsuit claims that the state's heavy reliance on local property taxes to fund public education means children in low-income districts go without the educational resources they need. Pennsylvania ranks 44th nationally in state share of funding for public schools. According to Maury McInerney with the Education Law Center, the ruling means that all plaintiffs in the suit, including those whose children have graduated from high school since the case was filed in 2014, can continue to pursue their case.
They'll be able to present their own evidence and their perspective in our case, as well as to be a part of the remedy that would be fashioned by the court.
I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Dozens of anti-domestic violence advocates in Ohio are coming together to call for improved funding for services that help people in crisis.
During the Ohio Domestic Violence Network Spring Advocacy Day, survivors of violence, advocates, and nearly 50 legislators will discuss the challenges shelters and survivors face. Policy Director at ODVN, Michaela Deming, explains that during the pandemic, domestic violence programs have been there to help survivors seeking safety.
None of our shelters closed. All of our services have remained open through all of these difficult times. Programs deserve our support, and victims deserve to have the state commit to making sure that we can keep our programs open so that there's a safe place for families to escape violence.
In 2019, Ohio funded domestic violence programs in the state budget for the first time and set it at about $1 million annually. Today, advocates will reach out to state legislators to ask that the amount be increased to $5 million in each year of the next biennium budget. Mary Sherman reporting.
Finally, Diane Bernard tells us criminal justice advocates are urging West Virginia lawmakers to oppose a bill heading to the Senate that would add up to 10 years of extended supervision for certain drug offenders, even after they've served all of their prison and parole time.
Ken Matthews is a peer recovery coach who served 5 years for two drug crimes. He understands the need to solve West Virginia's substance abuse crisis, but he thinks more supervision is a step backwards into what he calls failed war on drugs policies of the 1990s and would result in more drug users being locked up in the state's overcrowded jails and prisons.
Incarceration or long periods of probation or supervision hasn't been shown to aid in somebody reintegrating into society.
It passed the House by a vote of 68 to 29, with most Democrats opposing it. I'm Diane Bernard.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. On March 12th, in 1 hour, 13 of New York's 19 House Democrats, including Representative Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko, called on Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign. Cuomo is mired in 6 allegations of sexual assault or harassment and accusations that his administration manipulated data about nursing home death during the COVID-19 pandemic and that he rushed a bridge construction project to completion in time for an election. Delgado posted on Twitter, and I quote, "Being the governor of the state of New York is a privilege. Withholding critical information from the public combined with the growing allegations of threats, bullying, and sexual harassment reflects a culture of aggression that is unfit to lead. The governor must resign," end quote. Tonko posted on Twitter that, and I quote, "For the sake of New York's ongoing COVID recovery and the millions of New Yorkers who depend on strong, focused leadership from the state capitol, Governor Cuomo must resign and hand the reins of state leadership to someone who can give the job their full, undivided focus," end quote. Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Jamal Brown, Mondaire Jones, Nydia Velazquez, Kathleen Rice, Carolyn Maloney, Andriano Espalat, Yvette Clark, Grace Ming, Gerald Nadler, and Sean Maloney also came out in favor of Cuomo's resignation as of noon on March 12th. Assemblymember D.D. Barrett, who represents Columbia and Dutchess County, is the only state or national-level elected Democrat locally who has not called for Cuomo's resignation. Shortly after the calls for his resignation, Cuomo said on a conference call with reporters that he would not resign and claimed, and I quote, "I am not part of the political club," end quote, even though he is the son of a former governor. He said, and I quote, "I was not elected by the politicians," end quote. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Greene County lawmakers heard public comment Wednesday, March 10th on the county's police reform plan and recommendations during a special meeting of the Public Safety Committee.
The plan was released last week and offers 25 recommendations, including upgrading the Sheriff's Department record management system, implementing body cameras, and establishing a community advocate committee to review complaints. Tannersville resident Stephen Nash Weber listed several recommendations he said should have been included, such as requiring officers to distribute cards with their names, badge number, and where to direct complaints during every interaction. He said, and I quote, "We have seen issues with this committee's ability to gather feedback," end quote. He added, and I quote, "There's no better way of getting good data and feedback from the community on police interactions than that," end quote. Jewett resident Eli Bell also expressed concerns about the feedback gathered and the lack of transparency around the process. Green County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger said the committee encountered, and I quote, "a lot," end quote, "of people who did not want to go on record." He said, and I quote, "the committee did what they needed to do to get feedback," end quote. The Reverend Richard Turpin, a member of the Reform and Reinvention Collaborative, said the pandemic also made it harder to get input. On the subject of diversifying the apartment, KO resident and attorney Monica Kenny Keff opined, and I quote, "you can't grab people off the street and force them to apply," end quote. While increased recruiting and outreach efforts were among the recommendations, there are limitations, Kenny Kepp said. Several speakers emphasized what was missing from the report and the outgoing nature of the reform process. Collaborative member Rabbi Zoe B. Zack agreed there is always room for improvement. She said, and I quote, "there's always more. There's always more room to learn, always more space to grow, always deeper connections to be made, and always greater support to give," end quote. She added, and I quote, "I don't think we could have addressed everything," end quote. The full legislature will vote on the plan March 17th. A recording of the full public hearing can be accessed on the WGXC Newsroom page. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union. New York has lost a court battle to reverse a ruling by the Environmental Protection Agency, the General Electric Company's dredging project to remove PCBs from the Hudson River was satisfactorily completed. Northern Federal District Court Judge David Hurd wrote in dismissing the state's suit against the federal agency and GE, and I quote, "this lawsuit comes too late and is based on improper theories," end quote. Hurd did note, however, that General Electric could still be held responsible for more dredging if the state essentially restarts the process that led to the $1.7 billion dredging project from 2006 to 2015. GE and the EPA in 2006 entered into a consent decree in which the government agreed not to sue GE if the company adequately removed PCBs, which were released from its electric capacitator factories in Fort Edward and Hudson Falls between 1947 and 1977. GE dumped an estimated 1.3 million pounds of the toxic compound into the Hudson over the years. The company agreed to dredge the 40 miles between Fort Edward and Troy as part of the 2006 EPA agreement. They took out about 310,000 pounds of PCP-laden sediment from the riverbed, or roughly 72% of what was believed to be there. In 2015, GE finished dredging, and in 2019, the EPA issued a certificate of completion saying the dredging task was completed. Hurd wrote in his opinion, "the language of the consent decree between the company and the EPA leaves a clear opening for the government to come after GE with the full force of the law to see the job done." The State Department of Environmental Conservation says it is considering its options, including a possible appeal of the decision. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
things that I look forward to is, like, if I know I'm going to have, like, a fun day in class, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I know what I'm going to do today. So if I walk in expecting something and I know how to do it, you know, if they make the class fun for me in a way that I'm going to want to show up for it, I'm not going to want to fall asleep in that class. And they're just, like, talking like, oh, Y equals MX plus B, like a bland voice. They're tired. We're all tired. So I'm obviously going to fall asleep because I'm unmotivated. I'm not going to want to do anything. Mm-hmm. So, like, when the class is made fun for me, I know I'm going to thrive.
Right. And it's like, I'm that student that will really raise their hand every 5 seconds if I don't understand. Like, please, yeah. No, actually, like, explain this to me, because, no, you're going too fast.
Are you still doing that even though it's virtual?
No, and that's the issue.
Because I don't want to, because it feels way worse.
Yeah, like, it. I don't know. It's something about being on the meet that just doesn't sit right.
when you like, I feel like when you look off on a meeting, or, like, I've had some embarrassing moments. Like, I've unmuted and stuff, like, at the wrong time, and I'm like, oh, my God. I've definitely, like, I've turned my camera on accident when I was trying to unmute, and I've left the meeting when I was trying to unmute. And so I've had, like, a bunch of those moments that just, like, are forever going to sit with me. So I try to, like, make the best of my virtual experience. So it gets really weird at times, especially, like, when somebody's Wi-Fi drops or, like, the entire call drops. You don't know if it's you or if it was somebody in the class. Or, like, if your teacher's calling on you and you can't hear them, your mic doesn't work. It's a whole bunch of stuff, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of issues.
Your point, DJ Popcorn, too, about, like, it helps me when my teacher's, like, got my back and, like, can help me out with stuff. But, like, it sounds like at this point it might be, like, harder for you to have those sorts of relationships because there's that virtual disconnect, and it seems like the onus at this point is more on you as students than it is on the teacher to notice when there's that need and to reach out and ask for it. Whereas when you were in person, I'm sure too the teachers would have a much better understanding of who they need to check in with and, like, who's struggling with, like, they're also on the other side of this screen that, like, they probably miss stuff that they wouldn't have missed in the past.
Yeah, like right now. Yeah. In one of my classes, I have a substitute. Like, he's been here for a couple of days. And, like, there's, like, such bad communication where it's, like, so they would have it on this camera thing, like, a paper underneath the camera. But, like, only, like, a quarter of the paper would be showing. And then I would, like, ask him. But it would get awkward when I would have to keep on asking him. So at that point, I'm just like, no, I'm over this. I can't do this. Like, literally.
It's especially those moments when the teacher's like, oh, am I presenting? Can you guys see? Can you guys hear? And you have to unmute every 5 seconds to be like, yes, I can hear you. I can see you. And the worst thing about the entire thing is probably camera checks. Because they expect your camera on, like, the minute you come in. They're like, can I get a camera check from everyone? And I know I'm laying down and I don't want to reach over and hit that button.
Like, my hair looks crazy.
Right. Like, I just woke up. I have crust in my eyes. I can barely move.
Like, what?
Like, I see my sleep paralysis demon currently. Like, I don't want to get up.
Yeah, like, when I'm on online school, I do not shower until after school. So it's, like, ridiculous. I'm looking real crazy right now.
Yes, like, I really can't be seen right now, but you can hear my voice or you can see me in the chat.
Yeah, I literally roll out of bed. I don't even roll out of bed. I pull my laptop onto my bed and then open it.
Right.
And that's my morning. Yes.
That's literally what I have to do. The very second I wake up, I'm literally on a class. Yeah.
I don't eat till after school either.
Really?
Because I only have a lunch on one of the days. So I just be chilling on my phone at my lunchtime.
Yeah, sometimes I don't have enough time to even go. Like, by the time I get up to go and eat, just, like, I'm like, I don't even want to anymore at this point. Or sometimes, like, I don't even get to go and get breakfast or anything. So my stomach will be going, like, I'm like, bro, right now, during living environment, right now, second and third period, right now, like, my stomach wants to do this right now.
Yeah, but honestly, it's a good, like, online school is a good way to, like, say you were hungry in the middle of class, you could just go and just go make something, bring your laptop to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
But yeah, it's like it gives you more freedom to like meet your own needs, but it also sounds like it's kind of awkward to meet your own needs.
Right.
Yeah, and because y'all aren't in a rhythm anymore with where you were in person, like it sounds like just normal habits about when you wake up, your shower routine, your eating routines, all that stuff's off. And I think like it's routine is a really powerful force in our lives, right? Like it can. Kind of like our way of reminding our body what mode we should be in, you know, if you got a routine before a game, right, that like helps your body, right, and your mind tap into the game mentality, right? Like you do your thing, and every athlete's got their things, their rituals, you know. And I think school is probably similar, right? But y'all have to kind of completely recreate whatever patterns or routines or rituals you would do to be in that right headspace. And like, that's, it's extra work. You know what I mean? It's worth it if you can find that vibe and it makes you be able to show up better. But I also appreciate like day after day after day, like, you know, it can be hard to create. It's much harder to create new rituals and to keep them up, especially when it's all on you to stay motivated. And like, even if you're doing that, you're still sitting through a really boring class. So you're like, I tried, but like, it's still terrible. Yeah, that's a tough thing. But I don't know. Have you all developed any special like rituals or habits or like practices that help you get in a better headspace?
Yeah, I actually have. So like when I wake up, I have to get up at least five minutes before so that I can get up, but I have to make sure that I slept long enough so I can make sure that I'm up. Like, I'll go and get something to drink so I can, you know, something that's gonna like keep me up so that I'm like, so I know I'm awake, but I know
right.
I have a slight chance of falling asleep, and it's very high that I'm most likely gonna fall asleep. So I'm like, okay, I'm feeling tired, I gotta get up, I gotta move and do something. I might have to get up and go to the bathroom once, splash my face with water. I'd be like, come on, I gotta get myself up. Come on, like stay up, keep your head motivated in the game, you know what I'm saying?
Perfect. So for me, I like right by my bed, I have like this whiteboard stuck on the wall, and like I just write down all the things that I have to do, because I'm a very like organized type of person. Like I need to see what I gotta do. like so say I had like this many assignments, like I would write down each of the assignments and like check them off as I go throughout the day, or like,
because
school is not the only thing that I do. Like there's like right. a lot of other things that I have to do. So it's like sometimes like I forget, and then that's what kills me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I write everything down.
Yeah.
If I don't write it down, it's probably not happening.
Yeah. So it's like that, the visuals for me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I respect that. That's good advice for anybody listening, you know, just like little things. The little things count, you know, whether it's just moving your body, splashing water on your face, like, yeah, having your whiteboard, keeping yourself organized. But I think that's exactly what we were talking about like, that's college level stuff, right? Like when you get to college, it's the same sort of thing where it's like you're given what you need to learn for the year. You got to get to classes on your own. You got to manage your time differently. So I do think y'all are actually developing habits that'll make you more college ready even than some other people that have been coming in. And I was talking to Devin about this during the school, during coronavirus. We were talking about how like people might have this perception that they're not going to be as competitive for college because it's like COVID and grades have hurt, or you don't have as many extracurriculars. But I think if you, keep in mind, everyone's in the same boat as you, right? So it's not special. Everyone's going to have that kind of impact. And there's a hell of an opportunity in this to be able to make the case to, whether it's the future job or college or whatever, that you have all these other skills that you learn because of COVID that I think will, you know, also help you move ahead in your life, you know, and get to where you want to get. And I think prepare you better. So back to the topic, right? Silver linings and positive things from COVID. I do think that is one of them. And I'm sorry y'all have to kind of like go through all that sooner than maybe you were planning, you know? Like I you are losing something in that, I recognize, but I hope you're also gaining something from it.
Yeah, so we can get into some of the cons for a few. So I feel like my first con is probably my biggest con too, is my horrible, atrocious, down bad sleep schedule.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
And I have to describe it like that because that's really what it is.
I don't even have a sleep schedule at this point.
I used to, like, go to bed at, like, 10. Now it's whatever it really needs to be. Now sometimes it's, like, 1, 2. It's been 5 at times.
Yeah. It's so real, like, bad. Like, it's what really even horrible. Is sleep at this point?
Like, sometimes I try to make myself fall asleep before 12 o'clock so I know, like, if I'm like, okay, I still have time to fall asleep. And then I look, and it's, like, 1 o'clock, and I'm like, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even want to fall asleep because I'm not tired. And so I just have the TV on, and like, I'll just fall asleep out of nowhere. I'm like, oh, my God.
For me, it's, like, I feel so irresponsible when I stay up. When I stay up late, because I wake myself up, like, with my alarm, and I wake all my siblings up. So it's, like, if I don't wake up, how they gonna wake up?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it's, like, that's basically what kind of pushes me, like, to try to, like, that's why I set about 50 alarms a day. Like,
and if, it's crazy. I don't hear my alarm, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm
toast.
It's either that or my dad's coming to wake me up because he knows I might be knocked. If I miss my alarm, it's what my dad does. Like, he'll call me. He'll be like, you up? And I have to respond to him. If I don't respond, that means I'm asleep or I'm not, or probably I'm not responsive, maybe dead. But maybe. Not responsive. And so, like, I'm probably down atrocious, like, sleep, knocked in the deepest sleep I could be. And so, like, when I have those moments, like, it's just, like, those have built my character so much now. It's, like, I've, like, you know, I've become, like, I feel like this huge irresponsible person, especially when I fall asleep during a class, and, like, my dad will walk in, and he'll tell me, like, what just happened. Like, he'll get an email and everything. He's, like, I just got an email. He goes, oh, yeah, you're not in class. He goes, go back to sleep, because I know you're not even going to be able to stay up through the next class. You're probably going to fall asleep again the minute I walk out this door. He goes, just go to sleep. And I'm like,
I mean, I'm glad that your dad recognizes, like, it's better for you to at least get sleep and then try again than to force yourself through stuff. I also want to give y'all a little bit of, like, don't put all of this on yourselves as, like, you're messing up. I just pulled up an article from the Sleep Foundation that talks about how screen time is linked to insomnia for teenagers.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When I look at my screen time, so it's horrible.
Like, they took a poll. They found that 3 in 4 teenagers, 96% of teenagers between 15 and 17, tend to have technology in the bedroom. Now you're expected to literally be on a screen for school plus everything else, and you got to socialize online, we talked about, right? And so on average, young people are getting 9 hours of screen time per day. It's probably even more than that for a lot of people.
Definitely more.
No, mine, I had, like,
right?
But
school, actually, this was before COVID, right? So it's probably doubled from that, right? Because you add school on top. And the effects of blue light from electronic devices actually messes up your sleeping and waking cycle. And so 2 out of 3 teenagers have been found to have less sleep than the recommended amount. And screen time seems to be impacting that. So, and that's because your sleep cycle is based on a rhythm that takes its cues from sunlight and from being outside. So if you're inside on devices, it actually it deceives your body into thinking it's daytime while you're on those devices. So you're completely out of sync with, like, your natural cycles. So I want y'all to be, like, gentle on yourselves. It's not all your fault, right? Like, this isn't about you not being responsible. It sounds like you're doing as much as you can to be responsible. But I think we as a society have to look at the downsides in this of also a virtual technology and get real about what the right balance is for people. And, you know, to me, I'm like, I always thought the school day was a little too long to begin with anyway, personally, or should be spaced
they
out different.
They could give us a cool 3 hours.
And, and so,
if it was 3 hours where y'all were actually there, present, learning, really invested, because that's when you did that instead of being exhausted for 9 hours, you would like that quality over quantity, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so it's really weird. So especially, like, with me, I have an iPhone, so most iPhones do this, and other phones too. Like, they'll say your screen time for this week is, like, it'll share, like, it'll say your screen time for this week. It'll pop up, like, as a notification, and then I click on it, and it'll say, like, your total, like, screen time for this week is, like, 13 hours and so. I'm like, what? I was on my phone for that long?
All right, so I just wanted to say before we close out, All views expressed on Clubhouse Radio are our truth and may not represent the views and opinions of the Clubhouse Parents Organization of Mental Health Association of Columbia Green. So, right now you're listening to Tempo by Missy Elliott and Lizzo. So, thank you guys so much for listening to our show today.
Oh, also, yeah. We have our shout-outs, too. So, big thank you to Waveform and WGXC for supporting this program. Shout-out to the Juice Branch. Shout-out to the Catskill and Hudson Youth Clubhouses and the Parent and the Mental Health Association of Columbia Green Counties for supporting this program. Shout-out to you, Imani, and DJ Phoebs for being on today.
Shout-out to DJ Popcorn and Sound Engineer.
Shout-out to you guys listening today.
I want to give a shout out too, like, as our listeners don't always appreciate, right? But like, this is, we've got, you know, four young people. You probably got another voices at this point, right? Like Imani and DJ Popcorn. We also got DJ Ricky and DJ Sean Money. But the four of y'all have been extraordinarily committed to this radio show through all of this with COVID. And, you know, just speaks to like I'm so grateful to how well you show up to this, how you bring your full selves to this show, and like how you've taken responsibility and accountability for being here every week, for making that happen. Like, y'all just spoke to how many stressors you got going on, all this other stuff going on in your life. So I just want our listeners to know how much love and work and dedication has gone into this show. And that just want y'all to know you're doing an incredible job. And I really hope that things like this radio show and there's that you can keep finding other opportunities to keep being in a space where you're learning together, you're challenging each other, you're having good conversations. So just shout out to all the ways in which we still get to engage with each other and still get to learn together and do that good stuff.
Right. So, I just want you guys to take care of yourselves and have a great weekend. Peace. I'm a thick chick, I need tempo. Get up to the tempo. Get up to the tempo. Get up to the tempo. Slow songs and skinny girls. Get up to the tempo.
Since the pandemic, how have you decided to teach? I know the first semester was a struggle because it was thrown at you, but how have you learned to teach through the pandemic?
The sudden change in modality in the spring of 2020 semester certainly was a big challenge for me and my colleagues. I teach my classes generally through a style of writing on the whiteboard, occasionally showing graphics and figures that complement the lecture material. And also it's pretty interactive. So I like to kind of ask questions of my students and make sure, you know, take frequent breaks and make sure they're understanding the material as I go. And so suddenly changing in the middle of the semester to being fully remote certainly posed a pretty big challenge for me. Among my colleagues, we all had to sort of learn a new technology that we had to get used to. And so I actually got an iPad, which enabled me to use like the whiteboard feature. I learned sort of how to write on figures and stuff that I was showing in class, and learning how to log on twice to Zoom so that I could see the chat features from class, see my students, but also have this whiteboard. And I didn't even realize until about 2 or 3 weeks in that you could actually write on someone else's screen. And one of my students actually started writing, he asked a question and started actually writing on a figure that I had up. So it was definitely a learning experience for myself and for the students. And the students taught me some things. I actually asked them for quite a bit of feedback about, you know, what was working and what wasn't. And I also was learning a little bit on my own the fall semester, and then going into the current semester, it's been a lot smoother because, you know, we had the summer to plan for things, and it's been definitely a little bit feeling a lot more comfortable with the whole online teaching or sort of this hybrid mode.
I heard some other professors had, I think, Blackboard and Zoom teachings from UAlbany. Did you use any of these tools that they had?
Yeah, I didn't really use Blackboard much, except in a course I teach for freshmen. You know, part of it was I was used to a certain way of, you know, disseminating information to the class. And trying to learn Blackboard, which I hadn't really ever used before this past fall semester, while also trying to do this hybrid teaching was a bit of I didn't want to add too many challenging variables to my plate at once. So I kind of chose to just do Zoom and do the recording, teaching synchronously, but recording the classes and using the Zoom whiteboard feature and interacting with students through the chat, which seems to have worked pretty well from my perspective, at least.
Have you gotten any feedback from students on what works best for them and what works best for you?
As a department in the Department of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences, we actually sent out a poll to our students at the end of the spring semester. From our perspective, it felt like things were working sort of well at times and maybe not well at others. And we were thinking we were learning. But of course, that's just a one-sided perspective. And it's really best to hear directly from students about that, what works and what doesn't. And from that, we generally found out, you know, that students really seem to vastly prefer synchronous classes. And I can totally understand this, but we found out that students generally had trouble learning the material if it was just, oh, watch this lecture in your own time, not live, so there's no interactivity. And that was definitely an eye-opening experience for some of my colleagues, I think, who were thinking that maybe that asynchronous style was actually beneficial to the students. And obviously, every student's different. There might be some students that it was beneficial for, but we certainly learned from the students. I tried to ask students as much as possible, hey, is this working? Let me know if this isn't working. Give me some feedback here. And so I was trying to be as open to that feedback as possible.
How have you made sure that you're still reaching each and every individual student?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think that that's the biggest challenge for me. And I think one of the biggest challenges for my colleagues. And so what I've found, and maybe this sounds funny at first, and I'll try and elaborate, but I've found that my teaching in this kind of hybrid style where I'm in a mode where I'm teaching in person most of the time, but it's recorded and also live on Zoom for students who are not present. But I found that it works well for the students it works well for. And so what I mean by that is there are many of my students in classes that interact. They answer my questions when I ask. They're involved on Zoom. They'll ask questions even by turning on their camera and unmuting themselves. Or they're coming to class and enjoying that interaction directly in person. It's been tougher to reach students that are fully remote, aren't quite as involved in the Zoom Q&A. And so I've tried to check in with students as much as I can, but I know I could be doing a better job of that, of really making sure I'm reaching students. So everybody's a little bit different. Some students are really comfortable answering questions in class. Some students are a little bit more hesitant to do that. And neither way is better than the other. But I do want to make sure that I'm reaching those students that I don't hear from as much. And it's easy, I think, as an instructor to focus on the students that are giving you that constant feedback and think, oh, I'm doing a great job, when really you want to make sure that you're reaching everybody in the class. I know I could probably be doing a better job of that, of independently reaching out to students. I've done it on some cases, but it's something that I have to kind of keep reminding myself is don't judge how well you're reaching everybody by how well you're reaching just a few select students.
Would you say that you've been more lenient with COVID, with technical issues, sickness?
Definitely. Yeah. I as long as students reach out to me and tell me I'm having trouble getting this in on time for XYZ reason, or I can't make class for these reasons, or can I take the quiz at a later date? I've been extremely lenient in those regards. In some cases in the past, I might say, oh, you know, if you have like a note from a doctor or whatnot. But I mean, in this case, it's just leniency is the number one rule. I totally think that the most important thing is for students to learn the material, but learn it in a way that's not stressful for them. And so this is a really stressful year. This has been incredibly stressful for everybody. And so by adding a stress of, oh, I need to be taking care of my grandparents who are ill from COVID, or I'm concerned about my family who's no longer working, lost their job and they're on unemployment, or whatever the case may be, while also I'm trying to take a study for a quiz or exam and have a deadline. I mean, that's a lot to expect of anybody. And I've really just been like, just let me know. It's hard though, if, you know, sometimes I don't know the circumstances, and it's understandable why students may not feel comfortable sharing those circumstances. But yes, in short, to answer your question, super leniency right now across the board.
I know you said some of your colleagues in the department have also done like asynchronous. Have any of them tried flipped classroom where they teach online and then have an actual lecture with students?
Some of my colleagues have been doing classes where they do two lectures asynchronous on a week. So students can watch the classes at their own leisure, but then they come together to discuss the lectures maybe on a Friday or something at the end of the week. And to be totally honest with you, because we're just not in person much these days, I haven't really gotten a chance to talk to my colleagues about how well that's been working for them. I'm not doing that. I'm doing everything synchronously for all my classes. So students come, whether they come online or come in person, they come during a particular time.
Do you think the students who come in person are still getting the same amount of learning as the students who are fully remote?
I think the students in person, I try and replicate the normal in-person experience as much as possible. Granted, when you're sitting in there wearing a mask or double masked, and the instructor is as well, and everybody's separated and distanced, certainly you're losing something there. You're losing maybe group work possibilities because you can't cluster students together in a group to work on something. I think that overall, though, it's the students that are then taking it fully remotely that are missing the experience the most. If I'm attending a seminar or something remotely, I can't focus after a certain amount of time. It's just because, you know, you're watching a screen and there's so many distractions around you. You get an email that comes in and you're like, oh, let me check that. And then before you know it, the lecture has moved on 5 minutes and you can't catch up. And so I would assume that the students that are attending fully remotely are at a little bit of a learning disadvantage in that way. And I try my best to interact with the students on Zoom as much as I possibly can. I've learned actually this semester that when I have questions for the class, I will direct a question first to this class, and then I will direct a question to the Zoom students. So I make sure to keep the Zoom students alert so they don't just think, oh, someone in the room will answer that. I don't need to focus. And that's helped a little bit for sure.
Is there any advice that you would give to the university on online learning, online teaching?
That's a really good question. Something I haven't thought too much about. I actually think that there's been a lot of advantages. I say that with a grain of salt. There have been some advantages to the past year. And one of the big things is that faculty and students have kind of learned a new paradigm of education. I know going forward that I'm now going to really be thinking about in my classes, well, how can I make these classes as inclusive as possible? Maybe there's a student out there who is raising a family or working full time, and they can't take a class synchronously. And so what can I do to make them able to take the class, learn the material, but at their own time? I think that we've all, faculty, have really been forced to learn the technology to make that possible in the past year. And that seems like a real positive. It's something that we were working towards gradually, and the past year has sort of forced us there a little bit faster.
Hi, Jennifer, how are you doing today?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. It's been so stressful because I was trying to log on and there's no sound on my computer. So I have you on phone and computer. So,
okay.
As long as you can hear me, I'm really glad.
I'm telling you, you're doing way better than I did. I had Jimmy Kimball and I couldn't stop him. And these guys who are supposed to be my friends are just making it worse. So,
okay.
I don't know, Kamal. I think we kind of let him off easy on that one.
I had to give the folks who listening in, you know, play by play. They're probably like, what the heck is going on?
No, I made a mistake. All right, my bad. Is Dan coming, Jennifer?
No, he had an emergency and he had to leave early. And so it's just me. So hopefully I can fill both shoes tonight. So.
Yeah, that's more than enough. I mean, we're fine with that. Uh-oh, okay. Clubhouse kids are here. All right, we got another guest coming in and we're going to get started. I can't believe I made that mistake. Those who know me know this is going to bother me for a whole 2 weeks.
You know something, Vern? Actually, man, the whole trailer was really choppy on my end. I just didn't know if it was my internet or if it was coming across that way.
I think it was across that way.
They want to pour it on now, V.
I think it just happened to be across that way.
Yeah, I'll take it. I've been doing this for 8 years, and this is probably only the second time you guys had a chance to get me. So go ahead and give it to me. Go on.
We got to save a little. You're using it up too quickly. I got to save a little bit.
Okay, so I'm ecstatic to be able to have this conversation again. This will be our part two of mental health and the combination between mental health and virtual learning / remote learning. We wanted to have this conversation because so many people are dealing with this, parents, students, teachers, you know, superintendents. So we had it earlier in February, and it went so well that we decided to invite Jennifer and Dan back. Jennifer is here. Dan had an emergency. Shout out to Dan. He's a great guy, and we appreciate him so much. Jennifer, I thank you for actually coming on to sit down with us. So if you could, will you just give the listening audience and the panel who wasn't on the show before this, just give them a rundown of who you are and what you do so that we know who we're talking to.
Sure. So my name is Jennifer Samuels, and I'm the supervisor of the Children and Family Therapy Team here at Columbia County Mental Health. So I see some clients as well as oversee a team of five social workers that do mental health counseling for the kids in Columbia County. And that's pretty much what I do. And last time I was here, we had a great discussion about the impact this has been having on kids and parents and families and teachers, everyone. So it was a great discussion. And we also had fun, which I think is the best combination. So I'm happy to be back. Thank you.
So I just wanted to ask you, and then I'm going to turn things over to the guys and let them kind of run with this. I'll be the mediator. But I just wanted to ask you, from your last appearance, can you just share something that you learned that maybe you didn't know? Because we did actually have a couple of students on. We had V on, who was a college student. Anything that might have touched you being a professional, you know, that you didn't know about?
The biggest impact was about the sports. And I was thinking about the sports and how much kids are losing out on having that, just the fun of playing sports and the socialization of the sports. And then just like kids who are trying to get scholarships, like they're losing out on a whole year or now two school years of being able to train. And I just really left feeling even more compassion for what kids are going through. And for some reason, it was the element about not getting to play on those teams and the impact that that's having. And I don't know, that was the thing that I was really left with, was like all that's been taken away and what's going to be the impact years down the road for these kids who are now in 11th and 12th grade, and how is this going to impact them moving forward? So I actually haven't stopped thinking about our conversation. I've been thinking about it many, many days since our last talk.
Well, again, I just want to, on behalf of Drive Time, just thank you for coming back. Jay, I'm going to turn it over to you. It's all yours. I introduce your guests, and then we'll go into questioning, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, like last time, I wanted to bring on some more youth, so I invited the Clubhouse to come on, two members, if you guys want to introduce yourselves of who you are and then, like, what you do.
Hey. Can you hear me? Yeah.
You guys are breaking up.
Yeah, I think it's a little.
Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that, y'all. Tech difficulties on the Clubhouse side, so I'm sure that's Imani. She'll be trying to get clear audio, but this is Phoebs. Help coordinate programs over at the Clubhouse, and yeah, super grateful that y'all reached out to touch base. I feel like the fact that it was so hard to get some youth on like a 4:30 radio show speaks to how much they're doing and some of the pressure they're under in their lives. There's a lot going on right now with what's left of school sports and homework and end of the year and a lot of kids working. So thanks for bearing with us. And thank you very much for the invite, because it's a super important conversation and one that we've been talking about a lot at the clubhouse.
Of course, of course. And Edmac, you got your gang there. So if you want to introduce them and talk about them, or have themselves introduce each other.
Yeah, right on. Actually, I'm going to give them the opportunity to introduce themselves. So, guys, you can tell them your name, tell them what grade you were in, tell them your age.
Okay. Hi, my name is Solon Taylor. I'm in eighth grade, and I'm 14.
Hi, I'm Dale. I'm Taylor, and I'm in eighth grade as well, and I'm also 14.
Hi, I'm Akila. I'm in seventh grade, and I'm 12.
All right. And okay. That's my crew. So we're bringing it from the middle school perspective of what it's been like during this amazing journey that we're collectively on together here.
Welcome. Welcome. Do you guys have anything you want to talk to her about? So talk about your experiences with mental health and how you feel about virtual learning, how you personally feel about virtual learning.
Who are you asking, Jay?
I'm asking your gang.
So how are you guys feeling about just school right now and the way that it is? Actually, first of all, do me a favor, explain to everybody what is school like for you guys right now, your cohorts and all the rest of that. How's that go? Who wants to go?
Okay. So what we do is we do a hybrid, so we go in person and virtual. So us three, we go to school on Thursday and Friday, and on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we do virtual.
And how's that going for you? Do you guys enjoy it? Do you like it better?
It's yeah. Like a half and half. Like, those ups and downs, they sort of balance each other out, I'd say. Because, like, some of the ups that you get to work on your own schedule, right? And you get to do your own thing on virtual days.
Okay.
But then again, the down is sometimes the work is really repetitive. It's like the same thing.
Mm.
And you just miss your friends as well. You miss school and being in school.
The social aspect.
Well, yeah.
You miss the social aspect of it. You said no.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I don't need humans. I'm good. <He's> like,
what do you think the best part of you being out of school is?
Oh, I don't know. I just like working from home because I get to listen to music at home. That's cool.
What about you guys?
I like how I can make my own schedule and work at my own pace, so I don't have to have any pressure on me while I'm working.
For me, it's probably being able to go over something as many times as you want, because like asking the teacher, hey, can we go over this like a couple times, you don't really want to do that just because it's kind of nervous, just like making the whole class do the same thing. Like, some people might understand it, but you don't. So I like how I can go over just to do that if I don't understand something.
That's a good point. I haven't heard that one. That's a good one.
Do you think it's harder or do you think it's easier on you guys being virtual or hybrid slash? What do you think?
At first, when we first moved to virtual, they put a lot of work on us. Yeah. But now our teachers have cut us some slack, and at least for my classes, not doing as much work as we were when at the beginning of virtual. But still a good chunk of work.
In all fairness, too, these guys are in AIG, which is like the equivalent of AP kind of courses. So their workload is through, you know, they're actually taking high school classes now in junior high. So that's sort of that thing.
I know you guys play sports. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about not being able to do all of that?
Oh, first, Solon, tell your story of last year. How did that happen?
So, last year, I was trying out for track for the first time because I never did it before, and I got the confidence to try out for a team, which I've never done before, and I make the team, but on the same day they tell me I make the team, they cancel in person school. It was very sad.
Broke his heart. We're still proud of him, though. We're still proud of him.
So it was you. You were the bad luck that got us. It's all your fault.
That went left. Huh? It's like, oh. He's like, my bad. what about you, Keith? So you had basketball. Were you guys able to finish the season? And
we were able to finish the season, but that was a few weeks before school got canceled. So we were lucky enough to finish the season. but there were soccer and track and field that weren't able to finish or even start this season.
Phoebes, I'm just wondering, how do you feel about being the coordinator of the clubhouse? How do you feel about the effects of virtual learning?
It's been I appreciate hearing y'all's perspective because there is a lot of nuance in it. Like there, I think there are some youth who I'm seeing like grow in like really powerful ways as they're sort of like, oh, I'm more autonomous, I'm managing my own time. Like I'm seeing some really powerful development. And then at the same time, I know other youth who are like, I have not been able to really engage with or learn. Like they miss learning, you know? And I think that's being appreciated differently is what I've been hearing from some of our kids, that, you know, just the ability to engage with the content and the material itself, even if you can keep up with the homework, which is hard. It's like the sense of, it's not as the lack of group work, that point about it being awkward to ask questions and like have a follow-up conversation. I've heard that a bunch. So I think there's definitely an impact on learning. And I think that's something we've been trying to just work in our own space, you know, keep us in important conversations about the content. And, you know, I know you're talking about this lens of like, what's the mental health impact? I think that's varied too. I know kids who are like, whoa, this is way better for my mental health, like getting up on my own schedule, not having to stress about being in person, especially because there's been a lot of flexibility with video on and off. I think like youth have been able to manage that. I've heard for some kids that's been way better. And then I know other kids on the totally other end of the spectrum where it feels isolating. It feels hard to get that sort of social, you know, if you're missing extracurricular activities, that can be really hard and just something that people are missing. So, I feel like it's a mixed bag, and like, I think my punchline is like, I'm super blown away by the resilience and the like incredible just like maturity that I've seen in all of our youth about how they're thinking about, like, they're coming to me and saying like, my headspace isn't right when I'm trying to get up in the morning, so I just set up my whole room differently and I'm not going to be in bed when I do homework, and like the wherewithal of how they're managing their space. Like I think those sorts of skills actually might come in handy down the road. It's not the same as learning chemistry, but there's these more like real life skills that I think I'm noticing people develop from this experience, for better or worse.
Yeah, great. Amani, is your mic working, or are you good now?
Yeah, it's working now.
How do you feel? We have Jennifer here. Do you have any questions for her? She's a mental health specialist. Do you have any questions, anything you want to ask, or how do you feel about your whole experience with school right now?
Well, I feel like school used to be like just regular stressful, but now because of this like corona.
Oh, like we might have lost her.
I think so.
Okay.
Get up, Jake. Let's go. Pick it up. You got it.
Alrighty. Ed, how do you feel? How you feeling? Part two
is really exciting, man. And first of all, let me just say to Phoebes, if I could just ask you a question real quick, because you seem to have a lot of contact with the kids. Are you finding a common that maybe a lot of the youth are sharing as far as emotionally with all these adjustments that are taking place? Like, is there a theme or a common denominator? I know there's sometimes both sides. For positive for or negative against, but are you noticing any sort of theme that sort of crosses the board?
Just like the emotional experience of all this. It's, you know, it's, I really do feel like there's such diversity, honestly, in it, but if I were to like talk about the emotions that we want to be attuned to or paying attention to, I think I'm trying to pay attention to kind of like that sense of actually that there is still emotional investment in it. You know, I'm like worried about the kids who I see sort of like tapping out and not really even being in a dialogue about it, not really expressing how they're feeling about it. You know, those are the ones where I'm like, oh, okay, like you're sort of starting to check out about this, and you're probably very likely to be somebody who's maybe not like actually able to follow.